This is Around the Rim with LaChyna Robinson.
Hello, basketball fans. It is your ESPNW Women's Basketball Podcast. That's right, Around the Rim. And boy, oh boy, are we in a special time right now for the WNBA. We have a Game 5 coming up on Thursday. So we have so much to talk about because there have been four games of this wonderful series between the Minnesota Lynx and the LA Sparks. I can't break this all down myself, and I just can't tell you how excited and how fitting it is to have a very, very special guest on the show. Of course, we're joined by Tarika Foster, my producer, but we also have with us today two-time WNBA champ and three-time Olympic gold medalist, Katie Smith. Yes, welcome to the show, Katie.
Thank you.
Boy, I am so excited to have you. And fans, just to give you a little bit of a preview, yes, we're going to talk about the series so far. Katie actually has a connection to both Cheryl Reed from her time in Detroit, winning championships there, and also Brian Agler from ABL, from Seattle, from Minnesota. So we are going to have a lot to talk about. And let's just jump into the action. First of all, Katie, let me just say this. I was in Minnesota when they did the recognition of the WNBA 20 greatest players. Of course, you're in there. You were a lock. But the crowd went crazy when your name was announced. What did that feel like for you?
It felt great. You know, we always joke when I played in Minnesota, before I got traded, we were always like Lynx for life, you know, and that's kind of how I felt. But I just made such great connections with the fans and enjoyed the city when I was there for those 6.5 years. So it was always fun for me to go back to Minnesota. Anytime we play, even if we're on the opposing team, just lots of love from my end to them and them to me.
Man, I thought I had to look up because I thought Maya Moore had been announced, and I looked and I was like,
no,
"It's Katie Smith."
Those guys, you know, those championships and what they've been doing is phenomenal. So they'll pass me, but I'm back at the original. You know, I'm back in the start of it.
Yeah, well, the fans, it was clear that they appreciated all that you have given. So we are happy to have your insight, and with that, we're going to jump right into the first quarter.
First quarter.
All right, people. That's right. It's first quarter, and it's time to blow the whistle on games 1 through 4. So Katie and I are going to go quickly through the series so far between LA and Minnesota. Now, Minnesota had home court advantage through the WNBA finals. They were the number one overall seed. And so we start in Minnesota with maybe the most surprising game thus far. Game one, Sunday, October 9th, it was the LA Sparks that stole one on the road, 78-76, on a game-winning shot from Elena Beard. So right now, we are going to hear from Elena post-game to get us started.
Elena, 24.7 seconds left in the game. It's tied up. Take us through that last play.
Coach threw up a play. I think that last shot was the perfect example of who we are as a team. It was constant encouragement the entire game from my teammates. And the way that we ended with poise and togetherness, and it speaks volumes to us as a team.
This is your second win in Minnesota this season. What has given your team the confidence to come in here and get a big victory?
You know, I don't think it has anything to do with Minnesota. It has everything to do with us and the trust that we have in each other, the belief that we have, and it showed tonight. In the playoffs, it's not going to be a smooth game. It's not going to be a pretty game, and tonight was an example of that. But with constant perseverance, you know, we got through it.
Perseverance is the perfect way to end that because that just sums up Elena Beard's career in the WNBA. Yeah. And what a huge moment. Katie, I mean, she was 1 for 4 before she hit that shot. What was going through your mind when that went down?
It's huge for her, just knowing AB. I think, you know, Elena, throughout her career and the injuries that she's battled through, the work she's put in, a great teammate that she is. She's always positive. So just to see, first of all, surprised, you know what I mean? Like, wow, buzzer beater game one. This is bananas. And then on top of it, it's AB, and you just are, you know, really happy for the player to have an opportunity to shine like that and to get it done. You know, it just means a lot, especially, as you said, for what she's put into this game, and just had to battle through throughout her career. That was a big moment for her and obviously for the LA Sparks.
So in breaking this down, you know, we remember some famous buzzer beaters in WNBA playoff history. Teresa Weatherspoon, of course, Maya Moore just last year at Indiana. Mm-hmm. So this was a really exciting game. In your opinion, Katie, what happened to the series, both for L.A. mentally and also Minnesota mentally, with how game one went?
You know, I'm not sure it really bothered either. It obviously gives L.A. momentum, right? They did what they needed to do, which is steal a game on the road because Minnesota had home court advantage. So you have to win one of those games. And then if you win your home games, then you're, you know, WNBA champ. So, but on the Lynx side, I don't feel like it probably changed a whole lot of mentality. I think they felt like they maybe let one slip away because it was a last second shot. You know, one less turnover, one made bucket, you know, making a layup, and the game may have been different. But I think because of the veterans that they have, the experience that they've had, they've been in the WNBA championships like year after year. I just don't think it fazed them. Both teams and both coaches know that it's a series. It's not just a one game. It's not just 40 minutes. You got the whole series to go. So I don't think it mentally shook many. And I don't think it really put LA in a place where they're like, yeah, we got this. I think it was just like, you know, one step is, you know, for LA. And then many's just like, hey, we got to come out and take care of business the next time they hit the floor.
I think you're absolutely right in that both teams were expecting a competitive series. So I know it was exciting for all of us fans. And it was like, okay, what's going to happen next on the big shot? But they both seemed to pretty much keep their composure. Just a couple highlights in terms of the stats from that game. Maya had 18. Sylvia Fowles had 18. Lindsey Whalen had 18. Quiet night for Simone Augustus, which may come into play a little bit here in a moment. For LA, NECA had 19. Candace had 14. Christy had 19 and 12 from Chelsea Gray, who we would go on to see some of her best basketball in the WNBA final. So moving ahead to game two, obviously Minnesota has an understanding at this point that they must win and don't want to have to go back to LA and play two games down two. And they did absolutely dominate in that game two, 79-60. And again, I brought up Simone Augustus because in that game two, she turned it on for 14 points. Maya had 21. Rebecca had 10. Sylvia Fowles had 13. Also 15 rebounds. They were just really clicking on all cylinders. But I thought the biggest part was the fact that LA only shot 33% from the field. NECA with 14, Elena with 13. Candace only had 6 points in that game. So, Katie, if you remember or could take me back to that game too, how impressed were you with the way that Minnesota bounced back from that first loss?
You know, I was really impressed. You know, expected it, honestly. I think that, I mean, watching the first game, having a tough loss like that, and they didn't play real well. They didn't seem real fluid on the offensive end. You know, I thought LA were the aggressors, but I thought many came out. They crashed the boards. They were getting the loose balls. They were, Maya was getting off early, you know, getting in the groove. Moan came out aggressive. I just thought the more aggressive team, you know, won the second game. And everybody was contributing, but I just felt like the hustle plays, like the extra effort, was there. And they also got some easy buckets. When both of these teams, LA or Mini, can get out and run, get stops, get rebounds, and get it out quickly and get those easy opportunities, then, of course, it makes life easier on the offensive end because I think both teams are pretty locked in defensively.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And, you know, just one of the things that I thought was very different from game one to game two is Minnesota had 16 turnovers in game one for 18 LA points. They turned it over 14 times in game two, but only 11 LA points. So they cut down on the amount of productivity LA got from that. And in turn, they forced 13 LA turnovers in game two and got 15 points off of those turnovers. So their defense was ratcheted up a notch. I also wanted to point out the fact that they won the boards 46-32, which they have dominated quite a bit in this series. What do you make of that, Katie? The fact that LA really has not been able to get over the hump, with the exception of game three, as far as the rebounding advantage.
Well, you look at Minnie, and I know Reeve, even earlier in the year when we played Minnesota, she was on, I know Sylvia especially, about rebounding the basketball. But they have big guards. You look at them, they're pretty substantial. I mean, even Moan is a big guard. And Whalen rebounds well. So if they put out the effort, and I think it starts with Sylvia, and I think Reeve, as I said, is always in her ear about rebounding, giving that effort. I think Howard does a nice job. Brunson is always attacking. And then Maya, you know, they do an exceptional job of putting pressure on you. And it's just, it's tough. And then when you get extra possessions, it just kind of breaks your back a little bit. Now, on the other end, I think Candace is a solid rebounder. Obviously, that guy, I think, is phenomenal. I mean, her, as quick as she gets up and great hands. But I think you have some, I'm not saying nastier rebounders on many. There's a little more bully, I think, to them. But if they put out the effort, and honestly, rebound is effort. And at the end of the day, you gotta go in there and get dirty.
Katie, first of all, let me say we like nasty around here. Okay, we also like the word. We also like the word bully because it reminds us of the way you played the game. Which, gosh, if anybody I ever talked to, I'm like, who did you just hate facing on the defensive end? Tamika Catchings. Oh God, Katie Smith. You know, or Diana Taurasi. Oh God, Katie Smith. You know, it's like those days of having to face you are still in everyone's. Nightmares, to say the least. So let's fast forward to game three. Now, the series goes from the first two games at Minnie. Now we are in L.A. at the Galen Center. And obviously, L.A. coming off of a disappointing performance in game two came out on fire. I mean, they were up 32-17 in the first quarter and really dominated the game. Candace Parker was exceptional. She and NECA combined for 45 points. And I mean, they shot 55% from the field and forced 13 turnovers for 24 points. I just thought they were exceptional all over the floor. What was going through your mind early on in that game?
Oh, they can do that. Like, they have the ability, and if they get a burst and they get ahead, they're even more dangerous. They can get just flowing and running and rebounding and moving the ball and knocking down shots. And then they play really well together. So it's always scary when they get a bit of a lead is because I do think they can easily extend that. They feed off of that. Like, that energy just gets them going if they get any type of momentum. But definitely came out with fire under their, you know, in their bellies about coming back and getting that game, making sure they took care of business. Crowd was great. Parker was active. It just seemed like that ball was picking up energy as it was moving because everybody was getting a piece of it. And then on the defensive end, many just looked like they couldn't figure out any type of anything that can get them going on that end. And it really, LA took them out of most everything and just kind of took care of business.
Yeah, I mean, I was just floored. And, of course, Minnesota did fight back, and they, you know, made it a game in several instances. They just were unable to hang on. And looking at L.A. scoring 92 points, that grabs my eye right away because of how good Minnesota is defensively. So the end score was 92-75. Maya only had 9 points in that game. Very quiet night for her. Lindsey Whalen, 11 points, and it felt like Elena Beard was bothering her all night long. Rebecca Brunson was a bit of a bright spot. I thought she got into more of a rhythm in that game earlier on, keeping in mind that this is, if Minnesota wins the championship, this would be Rebecca Brunson's fifth WNBA ring, which is just, it's a record, it's phenomenal, it's ridiculous, so she probably doesn't get enough credit, but LA really, at that point, took control of the series, obviously up 2-1. And I'm thinking they have a closeout opportunity. But it's interesting when you look back at that game because something in my heart and my mind, as we look ahead to what happened eventually in game four, Maya only had 9 points.
Yeah.
And I've never seen a team dominate Minnesota like that. And so I don't know what you think, but in my mind, I'm saying LA is going to have to pay for this. And that, I know that's crazy to hear, but that was really what I was thinking. What were you thinking?
Same thing. I did think that usually when a player or a team plays poorly, it it just is what it's that's like the rule. It's like the next game they have, it's going to be different, and they're going to be they're going to come out on top, especially when they're this evenly matched. They're so comparable in so many ways. So yeah, I totally thought like, yeah, I think Maya had what, 7 shot attempts, something like that. Like never got involved. So it was just inevitable for me. Also, I was thinking like, well, this definitely is not going to happen in the next game. Now I didn't know if Minnie would win. But definitely knew that the effort, the intensity, and probably would be a much better game for Minnesota.
Yeah, so game 3 was a lot of fun to watch. L.A., I mean, I know for me coming in, and everyone I think feels this way about Minnesota, when you haven't seen them lose a lot over the last, 6 years, you start to say, wow, maybe this other team has a chance. Well, fast forward to game 4. We talked about, you know, Maya having a slow game 3. Well, that was not the case in game 4. Let's start out listening to some sound from Maya Moore and R. Holly Rowe before we get into this.
Such incredibly high standards for yourself, but how would you grade your performance tonight? 31 points.
I wasn't aware. It was 31, but I was just trying to be there for my team. We had a great pace, a great energy about each other. We were getting deflections. Our post players played phenomenally, and I was just trying to take advantage when they were able to get deflections and skills.
What is it about this team when their backs are against the wall that they come out at their very best?
Hey, that's who we are. You know, we appreciate each other too much to go down without playing like the Lynx. So that's defense. That's playing together with a lot of energy.
For you guys, the time off now between game 5, you've got some time to rest, and it's in your own building. How does that improve your chances?
We're going to do everything we can to be as prepared as possible for game 5, and this is all we can ask for. So it's been a great series, and game 5 in Minneapolis, we're excited.
So with Kobe in the building, with Magic in the building, star-studded crowd in L.A., and Maya Moore puts on a show. 31 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. Under these circumstances where L.A. had a chance to win the WNBA championship at home, Maya and the Lynx just stole it. I'm going to put you on the spot for a minute, Katie. Is Maya Moore the greatest player in the game right now?
She probably is. Like, I would give her that. I would give her that. She really is unstoppable. When she's rolling, the way she pulls up so quickly, off-balance shot, you know, rebounding, blocking shots, you know, help side defense. Like, she's a stud, and she does it in a variety of ways. So I'd give her that right now.
And what do you think was the backbreaker in this game? Just quickly, I want to run through a couple things, and I want you to tell me what you think ultimately was the deciding factor. So Maya had 31, Sylvia had 10 and 13, Simone had 12 and 7 with 5 assists. Maya actually also had 5 assists. I think I said that, 9 rebounds to go with her 31 points. 13 for Waylon. They shot 47% from the field. They shot 27 free throws. Definitely got to the line. On the other side of things, the LA Sparks, a slow night for Parker. She ended up with 14 points, but boy, it was a totally different player from what we saw in game 3. She was 4 for 14. Beard had 11, 5 for 11. Tolliver had 15. Essence Carson Ford, I think I said NECA had 11. Rather quiet night for the MVP. And then Chelsea Gray had 20 points in an effort to really almost take LA over the top towards the end of the game. But what do you think was ultimately the backbreaker in game 4, Katie?
You know, I think it was Minnie's defense and obviously figuring out how to get some, you know, get Maya going. I think she's kind of that crucial piece for them, because Sylvia's going to give you hers, and Moan can give you what she can give you. But then Lindsay, Brunson, and who comes off the bench is always question marks. So Maya has to carry a decent amount of that load. So I think her scoring, and I just think Minnesota's defense, and then for whatever reason, whether it was Parker or Minnie, keeping her kind of not passive, but a little bit not as much involved, and obviously keeping a hold of NECA. I think their defense was, you know, the biggest key to the game.
Yeah, I thought they did a fantastic job limiting NECA. Again, only 11 points, though she was efficient. And then they also had Candace Parker just was a non-factor. compared to what we've seen. When this game was over, did you say to yourself at all, or did you feel like LA had lost their chance to win a championship?
Not necessarily. I think both these teams are comfortable, even maybe play well on the road. So playing at home isn't as easy as you think it is sometimes. So I honestly think
right in front of Kobe.
I just think it's sometimes it's easier playing on the road. So I honestly think it's really a 50-50 chance of whoever's going to win this championship. And that's what we want, because it has been phenomenal and you get the two best teams going at it. So I honestly don't know what the outcome is going to be on Thursday night.
That's what we want, Katie. Yes, that's what we want.
Exciting.
I'm so excited. It is exciting. Now, before we move on to previewing game five, there was a missed backcourt call. WNBA released a statement saying, towards the end of that game, the officials missed an 8-second backcourt call on Minnesota that would have given LA possession. Brian Agler's response, and I absolutely love this and love him for this, was, quote, champions don't make excuses. We had our opportunities. What do you say to that in terms of how that impacted the game, if at all?
It could have. I mean, you can play. Well, if they did get the ball and they score, and it's tie ball game, puts pressure on Manny to go down and make a bucket. If they get the ball, say they call it, LA gets a possession, Manny stops them, same kind of scenario game, probably going to go in Manny's favor. So, it would have made it probably a little bit more interesting. Put a little more pressure on Manny to get that stop. But, Brian's response is the right way. There's a lot of calls throughout games. Obviously, this was at a tough time, but you can't dwell on it. You can't use that as a crutch in the sense like, hey, this is why we lost the game, because there's so many other things that you can control. And that's what we always talk about. Control the things you can. The referees, the calls, those things are really not in your hand. So make sure you're doing the other things so that you don't, at the end of the day, are relying on the refs to make a call or not make a call to help you win a game. So I appreciate his response. Doesn't mean he probably wasn't upset, but you've got to move on and live with this kind of nature of the beast.
And that is the word from Katie Smith, associate head coach for the New York Liberty, a three-time gold medalist, two-time WNBA champ. And with that, we're going to have a finals preview right now. Let's head to the second quarter.
Second quarter, inside the huddle.
All right, fans, we're inside the huddle. We have broken down 1-4. LaChyna Robinson here, Tarika Foster, my producer, joined by the great Katie Smith. Before we break down the finals, let's hear from LA Sparks forward and MVP Nneka Ogumike with our Holly Rowe after their game 4 loss.
Well, Nneka, you have a championship in your grasp. You're in your own building, all the energy, and it slips away. So how do you get back that mental ability to come back and fight in game 5?
I mean, we learned from game 4. I think we fought very hard today. But there's just a few things we have to clean up that are really going to matter in the long run.
When you say you learned, what did you learn?
That we need to box out. We need to box out. And we have to be able to take care of the ball. I think we could be sharper on defense. And I think we're going to watch a lot of that tomorrow on video.
For you, you had 11 points, but a lot of those were very quiet in the fourth quarter, not a lot of scoring in the third. How can you become more of a presence offensively?
Just continue to cut, demand the ball. It's very congested in there, so you have to play through a lot of stuff. And I'm just going to continue to be aggressive.
On a night when it's a frustrating shooting night for Candace, and, she was frustrated with how the officials were calling her, how do you guys come together and keep her up and keep her involved?
I mean, that's something that we really got to try and play through. There's a lot of things that aren't, there's some things that aren't really in your control, but we can control a lot of other things. And we just have to stay positive, and I have to keep talking to her to tell her to be aggressive.
Well, that is the word from the newly appointed WNBA Players Association president and the MVP. God, how smart is Nneka Ogumike? Like, I'm just sitting here listening to her, and her level of maturity after a loss, Katie Smith, it just blows me away. But some of the things that she was talking about, the Sparks were out-rebounded in game 4, 41-25. They only shot 42% from the field. We mentioned the struggles of Candace Parker. So after hearing from Nneka and just your observations, What is going to be, give me a couple of keys for each of these teams, two factors that you think will go into deciding who wins the WNBA championship?
Let's see. I think obviously turnovers. I think for both parties, whoever can get the most opportunities off of turnovers will have a better chance to win. And then on the other hand, it's handling the boards. And these aren't knocking down shots. You know what I mean? We're not talking shooting percentage. We're not talking points per player. We're talking about the effort plays, right? We're in concentration, which is taking care of the basketball. And then I think boxing out and then being aggressive when you are rebounding. So, you know, go get the ball. Give that extra effort. If you're supposed to crash, then you need to crash. So, and you heard NECA say it, boxing out. And that's a mindset. I mean, it's just taking pride. Like, my man's not going to get it. Or if NECA had to go help on somebody, then I'm going to get down there and try to, you know, box out that the post player. So I just think those are the two biggest factors of the night will be turnovers and box outs and or rebounding. And whoever kind of wins those battles, I think will become the WNBA champs.
Yeah, it has been so exciting to watch. And another thing, as we look at those factors, turnovers, like you said, the defenses, the rebounding. Holly asked NECA about Candace Parker. You know, and there's been so much talk about Parker from not making the Olympic team to not being on first or second team all WNBA, which I think is a tragedy. I've just so enjoyed covering Candace this year. It's obvious that there's a different level of maturity, but we saw her digress a little bit in game four. You know, we saw some frustration. We saw some arguing with the officials, some things that, you know, could emotionally impact the ups and downs of your team. What is it that Parker has got to do in this game in terms of helping her team get over the hump? She's still looking for that first WNBA championship.
Just stay locked in. And, you know, NECA pretty much said it, just, you know, constantly telling her, like, hey, stay confident in your shot, take good shots, and then do all the little things. Run hard, like on offense, you know, on a defensive end, making sure that you're doing your assignment. So, you know, just locking into the little things and then keeping her head engaged and what's going on, not allowing the referees. And just like I said, the controllables, take care of what you can control. You know, don't worry about the refs missing calls or making a bad call. It's just those things happen, and they do bug you, but it's just like you got to let them, like, have your moment and then let it go. So I just think she just has to focus in on, you know, being aggressive, trying to take, you know, advantage of the mismatches, understand who's guarding her, and then the other end, just making sure she's getting rebounds and being there for her teammates.
It is going to be a showdown. And for fans, once again, WNBA Finals, Game 5, Thursday night, 8 p.m. on ESPN2. Couple things I'm looking for, Katie, and then I want to hear what Tarika's looking for as well. I am looking to see if L.A. can defend. All season long, that's been one of the hot topics about this L.A. team. We knew they could score the basketball, right? They've got NECA, they've got Christy, they've got Candace. But over the past few years, starting with Carol Ross, the defensive mentality has started to build. That's what L.A. really needed. They needed some focus on shutting people down. Then you bring in Brian Agler, arguably the best defensive coach to ever coach in women's professional basketball, okay? And he continues and just totally changes that mentality, and he demands defense. I've seen him in practice. That's what he asks for from his players. I want to know if the culture has really changed, or is L.A. just going to go back to the L.A. we've always known? If they can get stops in Minnesota, you deserve to win a WNBA championship, in my opinion. And I think that's really what it's going to come down to. Can L.A. get stops? You've got Elena Beard, who has been, if L.A. wins, she's been the MVP, in my opinion. And then you've got Essence Carson, who was bought in for defense. And then you've got NECA, who Brian and also Elena Beard will give a ton of credit in terms of this team's mentality. Right. That is one thing I'm looking for. And then for Minnesota, I think it's just them playing their game, you know, the taking care of the ball, you know, not feeding L.A. offensively with the turnovers, as you mentioned. I think that's going to be definitely a key for them. Tarika, what are you looking for?
Well, I think first and foremost, I'm going to be looking to see on Minnesota's side how much experience is going to play a role. They've been here before. They've been in this situation before. Is that experience that they have going to overtake and overshine on their home court? And as far as LA is concerned, I think one big word that was used in game four is poise. At the end of the game, they had plenty of opportunities. Every time, you know, Chelsea Gray would shoot for three or hit back-to-backs, then there's Maya Moore coming right behind her to shoot another one to bring them right back into it. And they did not seem to me to stay poised, to stay balanced. They got a little rattled towards the end of the game when they had opportunities to take advantage. And I want to know if they're going to be able to come into Minnesota, if they're going to be able to go on the road in a game five in a do or die situation and keep their balance, keep their poise. Are they going to be able to work NECA more into that offense? Because I remember seeing her on Sunday calling for the ball, waiting for the ball. She's ready. And they weren't really working her in the offense like I feel like they could have. Is LA going to stay poised? Are they going to use their MVP? And is Minnesota going to let their experience shine through? That's what I'm looking for.
Girl, let me find out you an analyst. Okay.
Y'all been slipping on my skills now. Y'all been slipping.
Yes. Yes, Tarika. And we already know that you picked LA to win, so you can't back down from that.
I'm not backing down. I am secretly in my mind saying, Candace, y'all better get this win.
No. We're going to let you keep that. And I think you were ready to brag after they were up, but we're going to let you hold on to your LA. Katie, do you care to make a prediction? No pressure.
No, I did. Even when we were at the first game, they asked us, you know, the 20 for 20. I said Minnie in five. I think Minnie has a chip on their shoulder differently, right? I think LA has a chip on their shoulder. They haven't, you know, Candace hasn't won one. Elena Beard hasn't. There's a lot of them are hungry, right? They haven't been there. But I think Minnie has a chip on her shoulder because a lot of people said, you're too old. You can't do it. You can't do it anymore, right? So I think they also have a lot of motivation. So they're both very hungry, but very differently. But I pick Minnie in five. I think there's a rough and toughness about them that I think is going to get them over the hump. But I think a lot of that has to do with Maya. Maya shows up, I think it's game Minnie.
Yeah, Maya is so special. And I agree with you that, you know, this is a team that's getting older. I believe they're the oldest team in the league. And so this could be their last chance with this group to get a ring. And then Candace, when will she get back? You know, I mean, everything is so perfect for them. This is her first finals. Elena Beard's healthy. Essence Carson is healthy. Neither one of those players have even come close to staying healthy. Candace, you know, even though I know we don't talk about it often, she's got health issues, which I think sometimes impact her when she's only got one day in between games. She won't say that. She doesn't even like to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think her days are limited as well. And so big opportunity for both of these teams and fans. Mm-hmm. With that, it is halftime, but stay right where you are because in the third quarter, before we let Katie Smith go, we are going to talk about the brains behind the operation of these two teams. We're going to learn a little bit more about Cheryl Reeve, this year's WNBA Coach of the Year, and also the LA Sparks head coach, Brian Agler. Stay where you are.
Third quarter, scouting report.
Katie Smith is here. LaChyna Robinson is here. Our fabulous producer, Tarika Foster, is here. And it is the third quarter. And while we have Katie Smith, we'll talk a little bit about the brains behind the operations for these two fantastic teams that have given us so much to talk about all year, starting from history being made, fantastic starts for both teams, and just how bad everyone wanted to see these two teams meet. And they did. Thanks to the new playoff system, we have two Western Conference teams, Minnesota and LA, meeting for the championship. Let's start with Cheryl Reeve. So, Katie, take us back or tell us about your relationship with Cheryl Reeve and what you know about her that you feel like has garnered her so much success in the WNBA as a head coach.
Oh, you know, my first experience with Coach Reeve was in Detroit. She was an assistant coach under Bill, along with Rick Mahorn, and she was a part of, you know, my first championship in 06. And then obviously was there throughout my career until Detroit went off to Tulsa. So just a lot of respect. I just think she knows the game. Easy to talk with. She was the person probably I relied on heavily when I played in Detroit to ask things, to to when I was wanted to blow up, I would talk to her. If Bill was getting on my nerves, I'd talk to her if I needed. So she was really my sounding board, and I felt like, you know, we had a similar way we looked at the game. She was very attention to detail, but had a toughness about her. I know people always say you coach like a guy, you play like a guy. Like, I think that's a compliment. I just, Reeve is a no-nonsense, a fair person, a fun person, demanding, but has your back. You know, so it's something a player really wants. You know, she doesn't take anything personal. She's not going to hold anything over you and be petty or anything. But she's just somebody who's going to get after you and have high expectations, but will help you get there and do her part as well. And she'll put in the work so that you have confidence that, you know, she's prepped. She's ready. And then on top of it, she's great. She's a lot of fun to be around. You know, in practice, it's serious, but it's also, you can have a personality and have a good time. I just think also that she wasn't a head coach for, you know, until later on. I mean, she had a lot under Dan Hughes, under Bill, you know, Coach Little in college. Like, she's had some really great mentors over the years and people that she's been able to pull things from. I think it just all has gone into who she is. And then on top of it, she's just, you know, somebody who I respect quite a bit.
Yeah, I love, I mean, Cheryl Reeve is one of my favorites. And I really love the way she coaches because of what you said. Like, she gets after it. And it's not easy when you have that high level of expectation. What I mean by that is Minnesota, you know, obviously started to have some better years once Maya Moore got there, right? So they've now won the championship three times over the last 5 years. They could win four, which would tie them with Houston this season. They've made the finals five of the last 6 years. So a ton of success. And there's pressure that comes with getting a Maya Moore. And there's pressure once you do have four Olympians in your starting lineup to continue to have success. There's pressure when you add Sylvia Fowles to the mix. How do you get her integrated? And how do you incorporate such a talented bench in a way that everyone feels important and everyone is effective? And it is really masterful the way that Cheryl has done all of that, handling the different personalities, making sure the right pieces are in the right place, the right fit, that everyone is accepting their roles, and just bringing that expectation of excellence. I mean, when Minnesota hits the floor, 9 times out of 10 people think they're going to win. I mean, if you look over the last 5 years, that's just been the case, period. You think they're going to win. And so, no, it is not easy at all. So I agree with you. I mean, hats off to Cheryl, again, WNBA Coach of the Year, and just what she has done in Minnesota, building a dynasty. They have a chance to win a back-to-back, which hasn't been done since the LA Sparks in the early 2000s. So thank you for sharing that with us. And Agler, you have experience with going way back to your ABL days. Talk about your relationship with him and where your paths have crossed and what makes Brian special.
Yeah. One thing, let me go back to Reeve real quick. It's hard to win a championship, but it's even harder to stay on top for that long. And some people say it's because she has great players. And Brian, you can say the same thing for Brian. He has great players on his side too. But I'll tell you what, you need a coach who understands and can and make that work. And I think both of them done an excellent job. So, but yeah, to talk about Brian, we do go way back. ABL days, right out of college. I played for him for 2.5 years here in, for the Columbus Quest. And then he went to Minnesota. He took a job with the Minnesota Lynx. And I was there for 4 years, something like that. So he was there for 4 years. So I was with Brian again in Minnesota and then ultimately went back and reconnected with him in Seattle. So he's something. I mean, when you talk about defense, like I totally in the Columbus Quest days, I mean, I learned every way to guard any action. I learned how to guard every action, big players, small players, down pigs, flex picks, guard, you know, just everything from him. I mean, we worked like crazy, and it was not always fun, but he made you – he helped you instill a mindset that you personally took pride in guarding whoever. Like, almost took more pride in stopping the other person than you scoring. That's how much we worked on it. Like, he just kind of broke us down and was just like, this is who we are. And then ultimately, that's who I was as a pro. Like, I took a ton of pride in my defense, and it was almost, you know, and I would score and also guard the best player on the other side. So, but he also had a knack offensively. We ran, you know, like a motion offense, you know, five people just posting up, guards could post, base could shoot. But just kind of a, he just knows the game. He's somebody who's going to, he's going to wear you out. He's going to demand of you. He's going to keep you in drills. You know, he's morphed over the years because the WNBA season is different than just maybe the regular, you know, college basketball and when we were in ABL. But his demands of detail, taking care of each other defensively has never changed. And I remember when L.A. hired him, I thought he was the right guy for the job. I was like, well, they're going to be scary with him because he's going to demand them to buy in. No matter, you know, they had some, you know, not personalities, but they had people who were like, ah, I'll do this, I'll do that. They just weren't all locked in. And when they hired him, I was like, well, he's going to get them all on the same page because it's either going to be that or they're not going to be there. And he did that. Like, he has all, they're locked in on defense. They're flying around on the offensive end. The ball's moving. They're playing together and they've had success. And I just am, you know, impressed by him continuously. And then, you know, obviously have a lot of, you know, respect for him too, for what he's done for me. And then, you know, obviously what he does in LA.
Yeah. And in talking to you and even listening to you now and talking to Sue Bird, Swin Cash, that's what everyone says is Brian is about defense. And Sue was on the show and she and I have talked and she said, oh, trust me, they are going through every possible scenario and shoot around. Cause I was talking to her just about kind of how the shoot arounds work and Brian leaves no play undercover. Like you walk into a game knowing that he knows everything the other team is going to do. And he's very good at forcing teams to use other options on the offensive end because of how well he game plans defensively. And you're right. It's not easy when you've got Christy Tolliver and Candace Parker, Elena Beer, you know, very high IQ players, Essence Carson, Neko Gumake. I mean, these are players that really think the game. And so he's got to come in with a very confident attitude, a very definitive attitude as to what the expectations have to be. And Candace even alluded to that, you know, in talking early in the season. She said, the reason why I've responded to Brian so well is because, number one, he doesn't sugarcoat things. Number two, he's always got a plan. And basically that he knows what he's talking about. She said that, you know, he reminded her of Coach Pat Summitt in that way, that he is going to give her a different role every night, whether it's rebounding, scoring, whatever. It's not just Candace go out there and be Candace Parker, but he has a specific way he wants to use her and has gotten this team to really buy into those philosophies. So thank you for sharing that, because it is important that we keep the history of the game going. But hats off to Cheryl Reeve and Brian Agler. Cheryl does have that toughness, honey, but coming from Detroit and those teams, come on, you got to have that. If you didn't have that toughness and that nasty.
That's what's crazy is they both have it. And I used to, well, the ABL was during the regular basketball season. And we had a whole week of practice. So Swin, Sue and them got a glance of what, you know, glimpse of what Brian did. But we did it on another level. So anybody in those Columbus Quest teams can attest to those are brutal, but they were fun. But yeah, it's wonderful to have these two coaches at this level representing their teams, because they do a phenomenal job. I'm really proud of both of them and glad I had an opportunity to play for both of them.
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of playing for, of course, right now you are an associate head coach with the New York Liberty. What is in the future for you in terms of coaching, head coach, college, WNBA? Like, where do you ultimately see yourself?
You know, first, I see myself as a head coach in the WNBA in the near future. Like, you know, college, you think about it. I don't think that's my goal at the moment. I think there probably are a handful of teams or universities that would be at the top of the list and make you, you know, open your eyes and be like, I'll take a peek at that. But I think right now, like, the WNBA is where I want to be. I really enjoy it. You get to do everything. Like, you're doing your scouts. You just have your hands in on every part of the team. So, yeah, I'd like to be a head coach in the WNBA.
And could we see that happen sooner than later? Or is this a I'm going to plead the fifth or any insight into?
I'm not exactly sure when it'll happen. Obviously, there are some openings this year. Everybody knows, you know, San Antonio and Indiana. But I'm not exactly sure how it's all going to, you know. And obviously, I enjoy my time in New York. So there's lots of things, great opportunities. But I don't know where I fit in on any of them.
It's great to have options. It's great to have, and you've been so fun to watch. I mean, you are great with what you do with the Liberties. The players respect you, the game respects you, the league. I mean, and you're so perfect in what you do and fitting in that role as a coach. And it's going to be fun to watch you make that jump to be a head coach. And will we see you do television in the off season? Because we love listening to you on ESPN.
I'm on the trail a little bit. Not quite as much as you. I'll be watching you, but I am going to do some games this year. Love talking a game. Love getting better. But I do. I enjoy watching the college game, kind of seeing these programs and seeing what they're doing. Of course, I'm rooting for my Buckeyes. I think they'll have an exceptional year, too.
Oh, man. They are loaded. They are loaded. It should be a great season for Kevin McGuff and company. So.
Yeah, it should be. It should be.
Well, Katie, we just want to say thank you so much for your time, your insight. You are such a great representative for this league, for female athletes all over the place, for coaches, and your knowledge is much appreciated. Thank you for joining us on Around the Rim, and we'd love to have you back sometime.
I appreciate you, too. Thank you for having me. Really do.
Fourth quarter.
Out of bounds.
That's right, fans. It's the fourth quarter, and we are going to end the show with a special one-on-one exclusive interview with Nneka Ogumike, the 2016 WNBA MVP forward for the LA Sparks. But before we do that, we just want to thank Katie Smith for joining us on the show. Thank you for tuning in. Tarika and I really appreciate all of the fans, all the love that you guys have shown Around the Rim. And please continue to tweet us on social media, hashtag Around the Rim. We're also active on Facebook, etc., Instagram. We're all over the place. I am at LaChina Robinson, and she is at She Knows Sports _. Oh, you see, you thought I forgot, didn't you?
I did. You know what? My bad.
Look, and let me stop calling her Tarika Foster before her husband gets me. It's Tarika Brasby. Oh, I'm going to get that sooner rather than later. Anyway, fans, thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget, the WNBA championship is on the line. Game 5, Thursday night, October 20th, 8 p.m. on ESPN2. You will not want to miss it. Either the LA Sparks will win the championship and Candace Parker will get her first ring, or Maya Moore and company will win their fourth championship for the Minnesota Lynx on a back-to-back. Wow. Either way, it's going to be so special. Tune in, and without further delay, here is Nneka Ogumike.
So, Nneka, you came into the WNBA and had success. You were Rookie of the Year, but you make this big jump this season to becoming the MVP. What led to that success?
I mean, I think it was everything that you mentioned, you know, from the very beginning. Even before then, playing at Stanford, I learned a lot from Tara, and playing with my Cardinal. Always having a great support system in my family and my friends, but this year I think it's kind of all come together, and it's not the peak. I still think that I'm learning a lot and I have a long way to go, but it's always great to have these types of moments in the journey.
There's been a lot of conversation this year about the role of the Olympics in your success. How did not making the Olympic team impact you eventually becoming an MVP?
I hadn't put any thought to it maybe a week after I was notified. I think that it's definitely been a topic of discussion this season, considering how things have gone and, you know, the success that the team has seen. I think I can also speak for Candace that it may have been a bit more of a surprise for her, but I think that speaking for both of us, we just wanted to be motivated to do well for our team this year. We haven't thought of anybody else but ourselves, and that's what's got us here.
You mentioned Candace and your relationship with her. I mean, we watch you on the court and you guys hug, but you also argue. What has gone into creating such a special dynamic between the two of you?
Just learning from each other, you know, coming in, I mean, she was a role model as far as, you know, looking up to people growing up playing basketball goes. And I kind of, you know, shaped that into developing a relationship with her. I was able to learn a lot from her. And I think as I got better, she learned a lot from me. And we've rubbed off on each other in a really awesome way. I wouldn't say we argue. I would say it's more like, you know, constructive conversation. But we never take anything personally. And I think that's the core of our relationship.
It reminds me of a sister relationship, but you actually have a sister in the WNBA, in Chennai. What has it meant to your family and to you two to have the opportunity to play together at this level in the WNBA?
It's meant a lot. You know, I think Chennai and I, we had you know, set some type of standard and record in terms of having siblings be drafted number one. And my family, we've always kind of been, oh, throw NECA in first and then see how it goes. And once that happens, they always want us to do everything together. We all have our own paths, but it kind of worked out in the way that we're both able to be successful in something we've been doing for so long. And I know Chennai's proud of me, and she's my number one fan. And I'm just really happy to be able to share stuff like this with her.
At the end of all of this, when people look at this season for NECA Ogumike, what do you want them to say about the display that you've put on the court?
I just want people to remember me in a positive light. I've always wanted to be the teammate that people can always have a great memory of. Even playing against people, I try to give my best. I try to do my best. No malice towards anyone, but I also want to have fun. I always want to be remembered as a person that had fun, made people better, and also realized her full potential.
Thank you for listening to Around the Rim. Check out more podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app.